Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Positively Trek podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dan Gunther, and with me this week is the wonderful Barry DeFord. Barry, how's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty well in old Barry Town, I gotta say. It's been good watching some, what I would say, some delightful finales of the Star Trek Lower Decks season, and I'm really excited with some of the news that we get to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's our main discussion in this episode, of course, is wrapping up season 4 of Star Trek Lower Decks. So if you haven't watched those episodes, what are you doing? Go watch them. Yeah. By all means, they're so good. You know, even people out there who haven't given Lower Decks a chance, I really think you need to give it a chance and watch it, because this past season has been really good. We're going to be talking about the season as a whole, but the last two episodes in particular as well. And some of our thoughts and hopes going into season 5, which will hopefully come someday.
Yeah, someday.
Well, before we get to that discussion, though, we do have news to talk about. And I kind of combed the internet for news this week for Star Trek, and there wasn't a ton. But there's one big news story that obviously we have to talk about.
Yeah.
Because, yes, Star Trek Prodigy is once again nominated for an Emmy Award. So this is in the second annual Children's and Family Emmy Awards that are coming up right away here. And this year, Star Trek Prodigy is nominated for Outstanding Mixing and Sound Editing for an Animated Program. You know, a technical Emmy, but Star Trek excels at the technical Emmys, right? And any recognition Star Trek Prodigy is getting, I think that's awesome. Last year, they were nominated as well for Individual Achievement in Animation, one of the jury awards. So, you know, they've got this pedigree of nominations behind them and some really amazing technical stuff. Paramount, why you be dumb? Anyway, sorry.
I was, while you were telling the lovely listeners, and of course this is an audio medium, you can see my cup of tea that I sipped the entire way through you telling me all of that, because
a la Kermit the Frog, absolutely.
You know, just an Emmy Award winning TV show must be canceled immediately, because clearly it's not going to be profitable. No, I'm happy that that Prodigy also gets this recognition. It is extremely well deserved, and honestly, more of that to come, thankfully, and hopefully more beyond that as well, because this is a family show. It will get kids into Star Trek, which I think is really great, because Star Trek is fun and it's neat and cool, and they can make it their own too, right? They can do their own thing with the franchise, as I think is sort of really taking form since we've had the switch over to what is affectionately and unaffectionately referred to as New Trek. I don't know. How do you feel about that term, Dan?
I mean, I don't mind it. I think it's something that maybe some people mean in the pejorative, but yeah, I don't. New Trek, Kurtzman era Trek, I don't know. Some people also think that attaching the name Kurtzman to something is automatically an insult, which I absolutely do not subscribe to.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's bigger than all of that. So, yeah. I mean, there's been some writers who've come and gone in every iteration of Star Trek that I haven't liked, I guess you could say. Like, I guess for me, Michael Piller will always be the pillar, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I mean, I even liked some of Akiva Goldsman's stuff, and that wasn't always my flavor.
Yeah, that's something that surprises me as well, how much I've liked some of his stuff. In that historically, he hasn't really been my favorite, but sometimes when I look at his credits, I go, oh, wait, he did that? So there's surprises in every writer's pedigree, I think. I did also want to touch on a little bit of the news that I mentioned in last week's episode. So, Barry, had you heard about this, the 3-foot model, the original wood model of the USS Enterprise being discovered in the last couple weeks there?
No, sadly, most of my my social media has been terrifyingly and terrible conflict, genocide taking place in Palestine.
Of course,
but yeah. not to put the damper in that respect. Definitely, if you're keeping up, that's wonderful. But no, I've missed that. What they found so we're talking like the original Matt Jeffries design.
Yeah, so this is the 3-foot model that you might see in some of the publicity photos where Shatner's holding it and Nimoy's holding it.
Oh yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, and it was on Roddenberry's desk for years after that. Now, various accounts have it being stolen or him lending it out for reference purposes when they were doing the motion picture and never getting it back. But suffice to say, it's been missing since the late 1970s. And by all accounts, not completely 100% verified, but definitely given most of the nod by several Trek experts such as Gary Kerr, it showed up in an eBay auction just a little over a week ago. So that was a shocking piece of news that I just had to talk a little bit about last week. Now, no big update on that as of yet. The auction, as I mentioned in last week's roundup, was pulled very quickly. There'd been a few bids for it, but it disappeared. Presumably, somebody let this guy know what it was he had. According to him, the story was he bought the contents of a storage locker and was selling pieces off as he went through it. And this happened to be one in there that he said he did not realize had that provenance. Now, the most recent thing I've seen is Rod Roddenberry tweeting that he has not yet heard from the individual or anybody connected to this model or this auction, but he still hopes to sometime soon. Now, the model was in the possession of his father, Gene Roddenberry, when it disappeared or went missing, yada yada. So hopefully somebody does contact the Roddenberry Jr. About this issue. So kind of keeping my ear to the ground on this one because it's a really interesting story I've been following.
That is. I mean, I kind of want to see if we can follow the trail of rice of who owned the storage locker and how it might have made it there. And you know, you think about all the intrigue in Hollywood studios, and it is something of a, wow, I would like to continue sleuthing this. So thanks for letting me know, Dan. I'm going to see if I can get some inside tracks on that too. Cool.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break there. And when we come back, we're going to talk Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4. Thank you so much for downloading this episode of Positively Trek. We truly do appreciate each and every one of our listeners, and I'd like to especially thank our Patreon supporters. Thank you to our Constitution Class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Marin, and Paul D. Kinnear. If you'd like to become a supporter of Positively Trek and join our crew, please go to patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can get early access to episodes, exclusive content, shoutouts, associate producer credits, ad-free episodes, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you all, and live long and prosper. So last time we spoke about Lower Decks, we had talked about the entire series with the exception of the last two episodes. So I think it's kind of nice. We'll be able to tie up that discussion, talk about these final two episodes and the season as a whole. So let's start with episode 9 of season 4, The Inner Fight, which, first of all, carrying on the tradition of the amazing episode titles this season. Nice little callback. Nothing to do with the inner light or anything like that. Just a nice little play on words.
It was a good sort of penultimate episode in a lot of ways, too. You can kind of feel the amping up all the way through it. One of my favorite little pieces, and you and I brought this up because we watched this one together, Dan. That was great, was the confirmation of Thomas Riker being rounded about and out in the universe still. It's kind of neat.
Absolutely. And that was really fun because, like, on paper, Thomas Riker feels to me like a character that Lower Decks would just run with, right?
Yeah.
So confirmation that he's out there somewhere. I feel like I could be wrong about this, but I Jonathan Frakes is up for doing this kind of stuff. Let's bring back Tom Riker in season 5. Come on.
Right. I mean, and obviously spoiler alert, Nick Locarno's a planet now, so we can do whatever we want. I mean, Thomas Riker knows some people who are parts of rocks and stuff and parts of the ship. So I don't know. There's a lot they can do with this. And, I've really started to kind of embrace some of their use of canon. For a while there, I was worried it was going to get tiresome, but this season was just so well-paced and well put together. And this one as well. I mean, like, there's even some stuff that I wasn't even fully aware of. Like, the Jipper is apparently a thing from a Short Trek.
Yep, absolutely. What does Mud say? Shoot.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping Jippers on a beach somewhere.
I love it. I love the little callbacks. You know, they're fun. They're a little bit of icing on the cake. But when the stories are this well told and this meaningful, I feel like, go ahead, ice that cake. I'm here for it.
And I think that's it, is they're able to not make it like completely a thing. Like, they even kind of do that sort of turnaround. It's the guy who offers everyone Tranya, that evil alien.
Baylock.
Yeah, yeah. Baylock there. When I was a kid and I saw that actual episode, that scared me. Like, that really did actually scare me at first. But this time around, that it's got like a heartbeat and all this sort of stuff, it was very funny.
He's got all kinds of internal organs.
Yeah, all kinds of internal organs. Yeah.
I love that. Even once they reveal that he's a flesh and blood being, he still like sparks and smokes and his arm comes out and it's like,
tick, tick, tick. Yeah, he's still very mechanical in his movement. Oh, man. So, yeah, I guess like for whatever it's worth, this episode did a lot with its sort of like connections. And I mean, obviously I am not mentioning all of them. There's so many more pieces that I'm sure I'm missing. But those are just some of the canon pieces that really got my attention this time around. And for whatever reason, I'm feeling a lot more open to what Lower Decks is dishing. And maybe it's just the way they put these last episodes together. I think the finale really plays itself well into everything. I feel like they didn't give away a lot, even in the last episode, without feeling, and I hate to put this out there, but to some degree I find, and this happened a lot with The Next Generation, those kind of higher concept episodes or even seasons where things kind of tumble quickly to the end because they've spent too much time building it up. I was a little worried that was going to happen and it would start in this episode. But I mean, even some of the scientific things that wouldn't happen, like raining glass, you wouldn't be able to breathe an atmosphere that rained glass, but that's okay. That conversation that Beckett has with the Klingon, whose name I'm guessing you'll remember, Dan?
Ma'a.
There we are. I think it's really great that they're able to have these sort of tropey moments where we can see the character developing, but it's in a way that's interesting, I guess. It's a way that's relatable, maybe in some ways, that, like, I know I can procrastinate and do things and not meet what I want and run away from my troubles. I do it in my way, but it was neat to see how Beckett does it.
Yeah, and I mean, that conversation in the cave there with that character, really the heart and soul of this episode, and a true turning point for the character of Mariner, where she maybe admits to herself and admits to this basically complete stranger what it is that's been eating away at her this whole time. And she's maybe deep down in her heart known that, but she's not confronted it yet and really kind of picked it apart. And it takes this Klingon warrior to kind of do that with her, basically a Klingon counselor. We've seen a Klingon counselor now, which is amazing. And, you know, like he says, she does war with herself. And
yeah,
she rails against Starfleet and what it's become, fighting wars and that kind of thing. And he says, you must really hate Starfleet. And she's like, well, no, I don't. But, you know, they can they do this crap, but they still try to do good. And what we're seeing here is this jaded Mariner who's really been hurt over the years, and that tying her story to Cito Jax's and what her death did to Mariner, I thought was really fascinating as well. Speaking of characters who were taken by Cardassians, presumed dead, we know Thomas Riker is still out there. Maybe Cito Jaxa still is.
I think they're going to keep her dead. I hope.
I think so too. I was actually, this is why I'm not a writer, because I'd be like, oh man, yeah, let's bring her back. Let's totally bring her back. I would totally gut the effect that episode has on people watching The Next Generation and the character of Mariner. I would totally destroy all that because I really like that character and want her back. So I'm not a Hollywood writer, and that's a good thing.
Well, I guess so, right? I can't necessarily say I'd make the best choices here and there as much either. There's an irreverence to this show that has sort of carried its way through, and I've kind of talked before in episodes about how this could get too self-referential, almost to a fault, and that was kind of a worry that I had. And again, Mike McCann and company have managed to read into that with me as a person who enjoys Star Trek, by the way of Starfleet shows up, throws their weight around like Starfleet does in the Starfleet way, and nobody takes them seriously. And that's, of course, to teach them a lesson that Starfleet isn't as important. Ha, fooled you. No, we know you think that of us, and we're going to use it against you. I really liked that twist on a twist that I wasn't expecting. I think that's it, is a lot of the things that I was predicting throughout, and I'm not a writer either, I didn't predict. And I think maybe that's one thing I like about Lower Decks and how they've run this, is they haven't done anything predictable, but at the same time, it hasn't felt un-Trekkie.
Yeah, challenge your preconceptions or they'll challenge you, I think, was a lesson from Enterprise, but it's a lesson that the writers of Lower Decks seem to be, or the watchers of Lower Decks maybe need to take to heart a little bit, because I think we all go into something expecting a certain thing. And in a lot of ways, Lower Decks feels very familiar. They've put on the trappings of TNG, right? The bright uniforms, the kind of TNG era type ship and stuff. That kind of storytelling we kind of expect. But they do things to kind of shake it up and give us surprises and twists sometimes. And Billups as the bounty hunter,
right,
was a nice twist. And I liked, this show does things where we think the characters are naive. And we saw that earlier in the season with Tendi, especially in the episode A Few Badgies More, I think.
Yeah.
And in this one, we think, you know, Captain Freeman is saying, I majored in, what is it, like petty crime at the academy, yeah, or something, yeah, like that. And we feel like she's kind of full of herself, and she's not really, she's very obviously blundering. But no, it's all calculated, and I didn't see that coming.
It's sort of a lesson that they learned from the Grand Nagus, perhaps.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's another, actually one I watched recently again, just because I love that episode so much. Captain Freeman is making her a name for herself in Starfleet, mm-hmm, which is something that I'm going to bring up again later, because I feel like there's seeds there for things to come.
Well, I do feel, you know, this is definitely a really good milestone episode just before the last one. I will actually say probably my least favorite episode would probably have been A Few Badgies More. And mm-hmm, again, maybe jumping to the next episode, I do like the reappearance of Gudgie. but I think, you know, Badgie has seen his time, and maybe we won't see Badgie again. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem, because I think what episodes like this one and the way this season has been pursued, it really does show that there's a lot more places we can go, a lot more things we can explore inside of the sort of the boundaries of what Star Trek has created. And this has done a really good job of it.
Well, at the end of this episode, I think we get our first actual on-screen to be continued from Lower Decks, if I remember correctly. And we've got Nick Locarno seemingly behind everything here, Mariner confronting him, the crew of the Cerritos finding the evidence linking him to these attacks, and Locarno seemingly thinking Mariner's on his side, which is where we pick up with in the next episode, Old Friends, New Planets. Again, great title.
And it was a delight. Very much just a fantastic, well put together season finale that had a nice, its climax kind of came a lot earlier. There's a lot more denouement or falling action, you know, that kind of ended with that little pop of, you know, what's Tendi going to do kind of thing. But I do again like how, you know, there's a lot of assumptions about Starfleet that get kind of unassumed. And there's also a couple new takes on a few things, right? Riker throws rocks. The Cerritos throws Orion ships.
Yeah, the recently newly commissioned USS Battering Ram, basically.
Yeah, right. Just throw it, and I like that. I mean, that was a fun little piece there. And am I correct that trilateral shield, or however Locarno says it, that's very
the Trinar shield.
Thank you. So is that the same as the shield that Q put up in Encounter at Farpoint?
I don't think so. I think it was an invention of the Binars, that they were three of them. So there it was a Trinar shield, but
okay,
yeah.
It looked reminiscent to me for whatever reason.
I did definitely notice a similarity there. I think the colors were very similar. I was wondering if there was kind of a nod to it, but yeah, it was different pattern, but similar colors for sure.
Yeah, close enough, maybe. And that's where I might not be catching all my canon correctly or anything like that. So, but this was a good episode. It was like I've been saying this, kind of maybe hinting at it now, but I said this once we got on the call, is just how well paced the season was. I think this episode was paced well with its kind of slower ending. I also really did appreciate that the bomb defusal device needed two bars of latinum to
defuse. Goodness.
And he was blown up, I guess you could say, for lack of a better term, basically complaining that it has a paywall, and I don't know if that's just, like, you know, again another knock at our own current civilization, because I can't think of really many things without a paywall these days. But that was a good little funny and probably the same thing I'd say if I was just about to get blown up by a Ferengi Genesis device.
That was wonderful. And especially the fact that it takes two bars. Like, it's not even slips or strips. It's two bars.
That's expensive. Like,
that was a laugh out loud moment for me.
Yeah.
Right at the climax. That was so well done.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah, so I'm, like you, really digging this episode. I thought it had a lot of really interesting things to say about Starfleet and the galaxy at large and Lower Deckers, but also Mariner and how far she's come. The one thing that I really picked up on was the end of last season, or close to the end of last season, saw Mariner kicked off the Cerritos because everybody thought she betrayed them and there was a misunderstanding. She didn't actually betray them. She was actually defending the ship and all this stuff. This time around, she's assumed by Locarno to be on his side. But we as the audience, as well as the crew of the Cerritos, never once think that Mariner is going along with this. The episode could have done that kind of cliche thing where it's like a will she, won't she kind of thing. But we understand from the get-go that she's never going to join Locarno. And more importantly, so does the crew of the Cerritos and her mom.
Right.
Not at any point did they suspect that she might have joined him. They're all like, we've got to get her back. They see her on screen when Locarno's doing his message. She says, this guy sucks. And her mom's just like, atta girl. We got to go get her. Yeah.
Also, that was a good sidekick. Just straight up just solar plexus kick.
Then
she gets the Genesis machine. That was pretty great. And yeah, I mean, I do appreciate the fact that we don't have to worry about those unnecessary misunderstandings that, like, people can be logical and understand and know people and not suddenly decide that because this has changed, therefore they must have changed as well. And I mean, perhaps the same can be said about when Tendi is gone at the end. Rutherford's sad, but everyone else is just like, I wonder how she'll find her way back.
And basically saying the Orions don't stand a chance.
No, exactly. Exactly. They just have so much confidence in their friend. And I think that's a really cool piece. Boimler gets to captain a ship, and
yes,
he does have a good captain voice. I do have to say, he can brag about it all he wants.
Yeah, he really does. The best part about that too was that was his voice. That was, he wasn't, towards the end of the episode, he makes a joke and kind of starts talking like Captain Picard a little bit. But when he was actually in command, that was just Boimler's voice. But you could hear the confidence and the assuredness in it. And importantly, so could his crew.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody he's commanding could hear that voice. He's like, we've got to do this. Wait for it. Now, you know, like he's just, I was so proud of my little Boimler there. That was awesome.
Also, the argument that is taking place during the, you know, bad guy on the view screen when Boimler and Rutherford are like, he looks like Tom Paris. I don't see it.
So, yeah, I previously said that I think they should never acknowledge it, and that's the funniest thing. I take that back. This was the funniest thing.
Yeah.
The fact that Boimler has a Tom Paris plate. He's met Tom Paris. He's facing Nick Locarno, who we know looks exactly like Tom Paris. And he's like, nah, I really don't see it.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It is beautiful, actually.
We also need to talk a little bit about Talin, who has kind of this through line through this episode. Her proclamation of Cerrito strong, I think, was fun. And the fact that she wants to remain on the Cerritos and be Tendi's science bestie at the end. Very interesting.
Yeah.
She's really kind of taken a turn here.
Followed immediately by Tendi leaving the ship, which I felt kind of like, oh, goodness, you guess you shouldn't have necessarily said no to that call. But at the same time, I mean, I'm also very, very confident that that Tendi will find her way back.
Yeah, for sure. The gambit to get the Orion warship from her sister using Miglimo as the Cerritos champion.
He fluffs. It's gross. And I'm very allergic to that kind of bird fluff myself. So I know how Beth feels.
The sound effect when he fluffs, it's just a chicken squawk. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love most everything about that part of the episode, except for one thing. I feel like Tendi should have given Miglimo a bit of a heads up before the actual fight started, because Beth gets a couple really good almost blows in there, and if she'd have just immediately killed Miglimo right off the start, that's not good. You shouldn't have to yell across the fighting area the tactic that's going to possibly win. Maybe pull him aside before the fight and give him a heads up.
I would agree.
He seemed a little out of his element there.
And the fact that Miglimo clearly needed some convincing to do it as well, even in the face of extreme danger. Yeah. So I agree with you. That is perhaps a little bit of an issue, but I like their complicating of it as well, where that actually doesn't help because Beth falls on him, therefore winning the fight. I thought that was pretty good too. It gives us that raised stake, and I think that was really good because I felt like something more had to happen, and considering Tendi was there and knowing that Erica does want her back for her own purposes and stuff like that, I feel like that kind of closed a nice circle within this season as well.
Yeah, the callbacks and the picking up of storylines, I think, has been really strong, and even ones that I completely wasn't expecting, really in really good ways, like with the Orion storyline here, with the Ferengi Genesis device, which was nicely seeded earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. And then the confrontation between Rutherford and Livik, who again is back. Smash cut to the riverboat and them as the Twains. Not my favorite part of the season when it happened earlier, but I do have to admit to laughing out loud when it popped up here.
Well, and I think it has everything to do with how Talin gives her explanation for it, right? Sometimes the illogical tactic will yield logical results. And as a person in education, she's right. She is very right. So, yeah, definitely. What do you think is the significance of Captain Freeman's override code? I can't remember. Like, I would almost be certain that our friends in the Star Trek universe have already sleuth this out by the time you and I are even talking about it. But yeah, I just remember the way she says it, and I'm like, that sounds like a star date. I wonder if it's like her birth date or something, but I don't know. 06107.2.
If it's a star date, it would calculate out to February 9th, 2329. Could be just her date of birth.
Freeman's.
Yeah.
Cool.
Best guess so far.
Well, you have the best guess now.
So going deep on this episode, stuff like that is really fun, right? Like with the sleuthing those things out. The starship that Mariner steals out of the Nova fleet, right? Like I immediately clocked that as a Steamrunner class ship, right?
One of my least favorite looks of a Starfleet ship, to be perfectly honest.
See, I kind of love it. Yeah. Now, here's the digging deep thing, though. That's not a Steamrunner class ship. That is a Saber Runner class ship, according to the creators of Lower Decks, which takes Steamrunner ship aesthetics and shrinks it down to a Saber class size.
So I was wondering about that when they were going through the icy thingy ringy things. And I'm like, are these like full sized ships that they're just bashing and like destroying? And like, don't those take more of a crew? But yeah, no, you're right. I just sort of headcanoned it that, oh, Steamrunners must be smaller. But yes, if they've managed to reclassify it as something smaller, that makes sense. The only ship that can change size depending on the convenience of it is the Klingon Bird of Prey.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of the precedent there.
Yeah.
They actually did scale it down with the windows and everything on it to make it a smaller ship, apparently. And, I mistakenly during the live show insisted that it was a Steamrunner class ship and had everybody inform me otherwise. And, so my apologies to everybody for insisting there, but yeah, no, it is a Saber Runner class ship, and it's the USS Pissarro, which was named after Fabio Pissarro, who worked with Eagle Moss doing CG files of ships and converting them into physical models, who sadly recently passed away. So that was kind of a nice tribute.
That is a nice tribute. Just so you know, thank you, Mr. Alex Perry, once again for getting us that command code override, but he is also incorrect. He says it's a Steamrunner as well. So you know what? The best of us can also make that. This is even actually cooler. The registry number is Pissarro's, Fabio Pissarro's birthday, May 26, 1970. That is so sweet.
That's really cool. Yeah.
That's lovely. Anyway, melt my ice heart. So another thing that I really, really enjoyed specifically about this episode of Lower Decks, and maybe I just haven't noticed it, but they used not just their usual kind of cel-shaded graphic for the animation, but there were actually like drawn in smoke bits and stuff. There was a lot more animating going on that seemed more, obviously it's everything's run through a computer now, but there is looking like some hand-drawn elements to some of like the explosions and some of the pieces here and there. There's a lot more fluidity to the movement. I really feel like this was a high production episode. So yeah, maybe we could see Prodigy winning this year for an editing. Maybe Lower Decks wins it next year for something like this, because I really felt that the production value of this episode specifically, it really delivered. There's a lot of texture. There's a lot of movement, fluidity. It doesn't feel choppy. And another piece that I just want to rattle out here in this big piece, and that is to anyone who has ever watched the TV show Robotech or Macross, the really original ones with Rikaru, and they're still on planet Earth and it's got those cool ships and stuff. The music from Robotech and the music from Lower Decks are very reminiscent to each other. I've been thinking about this for a really long time, and some of the flourishes that take place in this finale episode feel almost ripped from the first 9 episodes of Macross/Robotech, depending on what you watched as a kid. So yeah, and for anyone who's like, hey, wait a minute, yeah, definitely drop a line on the Star Trek Positively Trek discussion in Facebook, just so I don't feel alone, at least, because I'm pretty sure there's got to be some influence there. So high production animation, very lovely to watch, just good eye candy all around, and the music was fantastic. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was a really technically beautiful episode, and I did notice the kind of extra love I think given to some of the animation and stuff. One thing that I definitely noticed is that final Genesis explosion, right? Where you have the captain's yacht streaming away in place of the Enterprise. Mm-hmm. The whole thing's obviously a Wrath of Khan homage, the whole Mutara Nebula bit and stuff.
Yeah.
The actual aftermath of the explosion looks very much like Nick Locarno's logo, which is the Culverd Starburst, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, not exactly subtle there, but still just like a really nice little visual callback. I thought that was lovely.
I like it also. I'm suddenly blanking the name of the people who speak only through poetry.
The Temerians.
Yes.
Or if you prefer, the Children of Tama.
Yes, the Children of Tama. And what's the guy who's there when he says something, her sails unfurled.
Mirab, her sails unfurled.
Mirab, yeah, her sails unfurled. I really do. I'm getting the feeling like I can almost understand Temerian to some degree. I'm getting there. Like, there was just the other day, one of my stepkids was going to do something really awesome and it was looking really good. And then all of a sudden they tripped and it was like Shaka when the walls fell.
I love the callbacks to ones that we heard in TNG, right? Like Shaka when the walls fell, yeah. Mirab, her sails unfurled. I love when there's new ones and you kind of have to intuit a little bit more what it might mean. Like, this wasn't the name, but it was something like Replunky on his wedding night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you're like, what is that referring to?
Yeah. Again, though, you know, they've crafted something that definitely picks at all the right nostalgia itches that I have in my brain. At the same time, you know, taking irreverent twists in certain cases that I think is something, again, fit very much to sort of a demographic of people who maybe have seen a lot of this, you know, this isn't Trek or this is Trek or it's not the same as it was before. And sort of those old usual, I guess, you know, tropes that kind of last throughout Star Trekdom. I feel like this is something that if you start realizing you don't have to take it seriously, you can really enjoy it. And the best part about it is Lower Decks has, through this season, has not taken itself seriously until it very appropriately takes itself seriously. And I think that that's a writing technique that works really well, perhaps for my demographic specifically and for a number of others who like Star Trek. But overall, as a season, where would you say this feels just coming out of it? We've been at the end of a lot of Star Trek seasons now. Where are you putting this one? And I don't really like ranking. I feel like there's other podcasts that can rank and they do a very good job of ranking. But for lack of a better term, could you rank this in terms of how you're feeling just walking out of this season of Lower Decks?
Well, I mean, there's a little bit of the new Trek energy coming out of it as well, and the recency bias and stuff like that. But I genuinely really enjoyed this season. I don't think there was an episode I disliked in this season, and that hasn't been the case, I think, for any season of Star Trek ever for me, really. Like, I have a least favorite episode of the season, but it's not one that I dislike, you know? And I think cohesively this season has really held together, especially in retrospect, going back and watching some of the stuff, knowing who that attacker is and what their end game is, I think really helps pull this season together on a rewatch as well. So I loved it. Again, I'm like you, I don't like ranking. I don't necessarily say it's the best ever or anything like that, but it's a really solid season of Star Trek. And this episode in particular, this finale, you know, if people want to talk about what Star Trek's message is and what it means to be in Starfleet, note that Mariner never fires a shot at another ship or another person at any point, whether personally or using ship's weapons or anything like that. She attempts to negotiate at every turn. When the time comes at the end of the episode, she tries her best to save Nick Locarno from himself, ultimately failing, but she tried her best. She did her best, which was the message of what Starfleet is. It doesn't always succeed, but it tries its best every time.
That's extremely well said, my friend. I have trouble following up other than saying you're absolutely right. thank you for that. And in kind of placing yourself, you know, in that, you know, this has just happened, recency bias and whatnot. I would say very much that this is some Trek that I have to say I have just sort of casually rewatched on my own. Usually I like to watch my usual Deep Space Nine little trench of episodes that I can just watch, and then a couple of TNG ones when I'm feeling down and stuff like that. But I haven't done like a lot of just casual watching for myself for any really TV show recently. It's just been busy. There's been a lot happening. But no, I did catch a couple of the episodes here twice, and sometimes just kind of let it play while I was doing other things. And I think that's what I like about this, is it takes you down a lot of the same paths that old Trek episodes from, you know, the most recent, you know, ones that have come out to some of the oldest ones in the 60s. They're not treading in any new space necessarily, pun intended. It's just, I think they've found a new way to approach a lot of things. And with that new approach, we're finding new ways to kind of rediscover some aspects of the great Star Trek tropes of, you know, Starfleet doesn't fire first, right? We're diplomatic. We're all of these things that make Starfleet Starfleet, but we're also the failings that, you know, Deep Space Nine was able to kind of finally pry open. Maybe TNG, if we're gonna argue about that. But they've done it in a way that I think really does match the outlook of a lot of people in Trek right now, where I don't really necessarily keep up with any of the drama. And honestly, I don't really know much about it anymore, or even if it's happening, because I've just eliminated myself from it. But in terms of accessibility, rewatchability, and if someone just walked in on this episode, and maybe this is a bias on my end, of course it is, I feel like someone could sit down and watch this and find it interesting. They might not get all the aliens or all the weird buzzy jokes and stuff like that, but I don't know. I feel like this is a good place to start, and I feel like this is a really good window into Star Trek for a lot of people. Whereas I would say some of the new Trek might not be as much. Not in a bad way. I'm just saying this feels accessible. There's a lot of dimensions to it, where you're dyed-in-the-wool Trek fans who can quote a lot and know a lot and have that kind of deeper lexicon of Trek knowledge. They'll be satisfied, whereas someone who's just passively watching while they're folding laundry will also enjoy it too. So this is kind of lightning in a bottle. I'm going to kind of finish my point off with, and it'll be interesting to see what they do next, right? Are we going to get another crazy high concept episode? I'm almost ready for one. Give me a crazy high concept episode on how Tendi gets back, maybe. That'd be interesting.
Definitely. Well, something you said there just really tickled me a little bit. I love the idea of somebody watching this and it bringing them to Star Trek, and maybe they decide to pick up some of the other shows later, and, you know, they eventually watch the first season of TNG and they go, hey, the Bynars, those were those guys that helped out that Nick Locarno guy in that episode. Mm-hmm. And then their minds will get really blown when they get to season 5 and meet Nick Locarno in the first duty. But anyway, I think that would be a lot of fun. I'd love to see Star Trek from that perspective somehow.
Well, and there is that option, right? In the sense that I don't think this franchise is necessarily going anywhere. We are now sort of entering into a world of franchise wars, it seems, where these big franchise kind of eke out their little fandoms and try to do cool and fun things for their fandoms. This has been a really cool and fun thing that our franchise has done for us in some ways. And I don't necessarily want to look at it so sort of stale that it's just a franchise trying to make money or anything like that, or gain a following or something. I do think that these writers, for love of all of the other writers of all of the other versions of Trek that we've seen recently, I really feel like these writers wrote for us as well. Mm-hmm. Like, they really did have like our demographic in mind. And when I say our demographic, I mean people who are sort of in that sort of floaty 40-year-old to 50 to 30, somewhere in there. You watched Trek as a kid. You've liked Trek for a long time. You've enjoyed most of what new Trek has brought, but maybe it hasn't hit every single note. This one hit every note for me. And, you know, maybe it didn't for everybody, but next to Star Trek Prodigy, this has got to be a Star Trek that I want to see 7 full seasons of.
Yeah, hear, hear. Well, let's talk about what that future might look like then. So we've got, in my opinion, kind of a new chapter for Lower Decks here. Things are changing a little bit. When Mike McMahon first outlined the series, he said it was the least important crew members on the least important ship in Starfleet. And now they've all ranked up a little bit. They're lieutenant junior grades. The sky's really the limit at this point. And the Cerritos has been involved in some pretty high profile stuff with this Nick Locarno incident, with being on hand for the first steps to bringing the Ferengi into the Federation. And I feel like there's something going on with Captain Freeman as far as her prominence in Starfleet a little bit. She's gotten a bit of recognition. The Admiral was going to relay how effective she was during the Ferengi negotiations. And now in this most recent episode, they said the top brass is very impressed with how she handled things and they managed to do all of this without firing a shot and all that sort of stuff. So I put this in maybe strong terms here, and I don't actually believe this, but going forward, is this a betrayal of the core idea of this series? This is no longer the least important ship in Starfleet, and I think they're no longer the least important crew members. Spoiler alert, I don't think it's a betrayal. I think it's one of the coolest things a series can do. My favorite thing about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, for example, is you cannot take any single one of those characters from season one and plant them into season 7 and have it make sense, or vice versa. Those characters have changed and grown over the course of those 7 years. And Deep Space Nine was a lonely outpost out on the frontier and the edge of the galaxy, they said. And by the end, it's the center of most of the political happenings in the Alpha Quadrant, and a hub for science exploration and warfare. Like, it's not that lonely outpost anymore. And I feel like the Cerritos is kind of becoming that same thing, where it's no longer the least important ship in Starfleet. It's making a name for itself, to the point that crews of other California class ships we've seen say, oh, you're the Cerritos. You're the like crown jewel of the California fleet. To answer my own question, I guess, I don't think it's a betrayal. I think it's awesome. And I really can't wait to see where they go with that.
I like to think of when they came up with that premise of like, this is your starting point, right? This is the starting premise that we'll build from there. And I think one of the only TV shows that could ever successfully bring things back to its relative self is The Simpsons. And look what that's done for it, right? 39,000 seasons at this point. And I don't know, like, I don't want to poop on people who like watching that show. Like, if it's something you like, great, that's awesome. It doesn't do anything for me now because it is just so, I think someone on YouTube somewhere referred to it, anything after season 12, I think they call Zombie Simpsons, where it's become so self-referential to its central premise that it's kind of become meaningless pablum. And I think that's where I've been worried all the way through this, is that eventually this is the spark's going to run out and we're just going to kind of float around in self-referential semi Rick and Morty humor. And I like it when I'm wrong, because I was dead wrong in the sense that, yeah, like, this is a starting premise that they build themselves from. And of course we're going to see characters change and grow, because that's what humans do. That's what we do. Since even the beginning of New Trek, right? Think about how much the world has changed in that time. Why on earth would we want something exactly the same? And I think that's something that we need to look at as, you know, or maybe not we, me, I need to look at as a person who likes Star Trek. What do I like about Star Trek? I always go back to the same episodes. Those episodes make me feel good, right? Well, this is making me feel good because there's enough connective tissue to the nostalgia I crave with an actually new and interesting story. And I argue that at this point, the fact that they could get Cito Jax's actor to come back.
Yes.
I looked. I don't think she's been in anything since her last appearance on, like, Star Trek, even. Like, I don't know. Like, she didn't do a heck of a lot. I mean, I hope she's had a great time and has had a good life. And it's great that she came back, because apparently if, you know, we can just animate you in, don't worry about it, right? Like, as much as it's cool that, like, Will Wheaton came back and everything like that, it is a little bit cool that we were, because I recognized her voice immediately once I heard it. I was like, oh, that's, and I'm freaking, I don't have her name off the top of my head.
Shannon Phil,
right? So I think that's interesting that they were able to get her back for this. And, you know, I hope they paid her handsomely, and I hope she comes back somehow in some kind of other flashback, because if she's someone who Mariner kind of fangirled over, that's interesting. And I think that could be something to pursue as well. A little more of Mariner's past, though we've done a really good, like, character deep dive on her right now. I think we can move on to another character. For instance, moving forward, when Tendi said goodbye to everybody, the only one she made any motion toward was Rutherford. She literally jumped on him. And I mean, I do actually have to say, those two need to kiss.
Yeah. I don't know. I did see, I think it was Mike McMahon talking about the evolution of their characters, and the dynamic between the two of them is something that I love, and clearly something that Mike McMahon loves as well. And I don't think he's too keen to disrupt that, and it kind of almost felt like they're toying with that in Parth Ferengi's Heart Place. Mm-hmm. Was his way of saying, no, it's a disaster. these two obviously belong together, but we can't do it. Like, we're not gonna do it.
Yeah.
Which makes me a little bit sad, but I kind of get it as well.
It's a junior high thing. It takes me back to, like, my junior high crush, who, mm-hmm, in hindsight, and actually after a hats off conversation somewhere in our mid-20s where, you know, she was happily married and everything else, was like, yeah, no, I totally had a crush on you too at that exact same time, and I didn't know what to do with myself. I just liked being around you. And I was like, yeah, me too. And it was like, huh, well, that's cool. And then we just moved on and still are good friends and stuff like that. But it is that idea of, like, for myself, seeing that as like, oh, come on, you two, you'd be so happy together. And don't we want our characters to be happy?
Yeah, absolutely. So Shannon Phil, interestingly, I looked up, and she was listed as, you know, years active in acting, 1992 to 1995. So 4 years of acting, and that's it. Now, this just warmed my heart, because I went back to that Wikipedia page now, and now it says years active, 1992 to 1995, semicolon, 2023. And that just makes me happy. That's so lovely.
I hope she can make it to a convention. I'd love to get a photo op with Shannon Phil. That'd be awesome.
That is something that one of the producers of Lower Decks has said. It's like, now I need to convince her to go to one of these conventions. People would love to see her. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'd be like, absolutely, out of the way, John. Out of the way, Sir Pat.
I have your photo. I have your autograph. Yeah. I need to meet Cito Jackson.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not even joking. That's true.
I would shell out for a photo op too, and I would have a sign that says Cito lives.
Hear, hear. So yeah, it should be noted as well, we get to hear Cadet Joshua Albert speak for the first time. We see him on screen.
Oh, yeah.
Sadly passed away, the character, before the actual episode. We never actually got to meet him. That was kind of a nice little touch. And Will Wheaton back as Wesley Crusher. Let's give him a shout out, because that was lovely too.
Oh yeah, no, it's great to see Will Wheaton. I think he's an interesting addition at the time, right? Everyone wanted kid actors in TNG. I don't know. I'm glad that he is a loved member of TNG, because I remember way back in the day there was so much controversy and frustration over him, and honestly I think he did a fine job, and I love the Traveler, and I'll always love the Traveler, and everyone can hate me for it and I don't care.
Well, I guess that's probably a good place to wrap off our discussion of Lower Decks season 4. Really looking forward, of course, to season 5 whenever we see that. As far as new Star Trek goes, the next thing we're going to get in 2024 is either Star Trek Discovery's 5th and final season, or the season 2 of Star Trek Prodigy on Netflix, whenever that comes along. And knowing Netflix, probably all dumped on the same day, which makes me a little sad, and I hope that's not the case, but those are the next treks that we'll be getting that are new.
That's a long go, and I don't want to sound like I'm complaining. We've dealt with worse as Star Trek fans. I guess that leaves us to talk about some new and exciting things moving forward. One thing I definitely want to do, Dan, for us on this show is to do a nice and solid rewatch of the first season of Star Trek Prodigy. If we can get that going, and maybe dive a little deeper into some of the pieces, because I think that though we gave it an honorable treatment when we did, in hindsight, I would like to talk about more, and I think there's more to talk about.
Well, we'll definitely be getting that reportedly sometime this year on Netflix. We, of course, already have our shiny Blu-rays, but we, like good little Star Trek fans, are going to be streaming it often on Netflix to show them how beloved that series is and how grateful we are that they are going to be showing it. So, go stream it. People, once it's out, it's supposed to be this year sometime. We don't have a date yet, but season one, go watch it again.
It's gonna happen.
And again.
Play it while you're vacuuming.
Well, this was a great discussion. I love every time we talk Trek. Lower Decks just has such a special place in my heart. So please, everybody, join us on the Positively Trek discussion group on Facebook. Just search Positively Trek discussion group. Answer a few questions. We'll let you right in. You can reach out to us, positivelytrek@gmail.com. And you can help support the podcast at patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you all so much for listening. We will be back soon with another episode. Until then, as always, stay positive.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.